everybody. Welcome to Respect Our Authority, Wisecrack South Park Podcast. My name is Jared, and today we're talking about South Park Season 22, Episode 2, A Boy and His Priest. But before that, let me introduce the other Respect Our Authoritarians, which actually a fan named Cortland sent to us, which I thought was pretty darn clever.
It's really good.
Anyway, it's really good. Anyway, we got Ryan.
Howdy ho, Internet.
And Lux.
Hey there, dudes.
And Amanda.
What's up?
All right, so before we get into it, a couple things to bring up, one of which got so many emails about
Jessica Jones.
Missing the Jessica Jones reference. Now, I wasn't here, so I can excuse myself from getting it wrong. But to be honest, I've never seen Jessica Jones.
I wouldn't have gotten it either.
So have none of you have seen Jessica Jones?
But clearly.
I've seen like three or four episodes and then bailed.
Okay, so that means Lux, Amanda, you guys don't have an excuse.
Yeah, valid.
Hey, but Amanda got the Columbo joke, which is the way deeper and more interesting joke. So,
but that's the wrong joke. It's not Columbo.
I mean,
they
were saying that it's the music, the jacket, and even some of the phrases.
Yeah. That's all Jessica Jones. The one Columbo line was a Columbo line.
In my defense.
Okay. Well, since we've all been humiliated, is there anything there? Like, what is Jessica Jones' superpower? She has super strength, right?
Yeah, like super detectiviness.
She's a super PR.
All right, well,
yeah, she's very strong.
Well, we apologize, fans.
We actually got an email about that parallel. Is that email from we got an email about that parallel that we can talk about. We're gonna talk about later.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do that in the mailbag. But before we go on, want to give a couple of announcements. So first of all, we got a new voicemail service. So you guys can leave us your comments, questions, thoughts, and insights, and then we'll play them during the podcast. You guys can still send us stuff through email at southpark@wisecrack.co. But anyway, the voicemail number is 213-534-8807. Once again, that's 213-534-8807. We already got a voicemail from one of our patrons on our Discord server, so we're going to play that at the end of the episode. But if you want to tell Ryan that his voice sounds fat, or you want to tell me that I'm being too wanky, leave us some thoughts. Also, one other thing, we're actually having a live Halloween show on October 26th at 10 p.m. in L.A. with the guys from Funhouse, Adam Kovic and company. So if you guys are Funhouse fans and you guys want to come hang out with us, we will have more information about where you guys can get tickets very soon. Also, one other thing is that people said that they really, even though I wasn't here, people said they really liked me trying to guess what my co-hosts here would rate these episodes. So we're going to do that again. So I'm going to just rail through this. I think Ryan, I'm almost positive, is going to give this episode, and don't tell me yet, but I'm almost positive he's going to give it an F-. I think that Lux... I think that Lux is going to give it a D, and I think Amanda is going to give it a C- to a D+. All right, so let's start with Ryan. First impressions. How did I do?
I have to say, Jared, it's remarkable how profoundly bad you are at this.
Oh my God! Because I know that you're sensitive about this issue.
No, I am not. I love this episode.
Oh my God!
I'm sensitive in the sense that I think it's pretty normal. Just, you know, people, not everyone likes hearing, you know, child rape jokes all the time, right?
The last episode you said it rubbed you the wrong way. It was too dark.
Because it wasn't funny. That's the main thing. You can make a child rape joke. If it's funny, I'll laugh at it. These were funny.
Wow. You and I are 100% the opposite today.
Yeah, so basically in this one, what saved this episode, you're right. At the very beginning, I was like, oh, God. You know, with like the whole church scene, I'm just like, okay, when is the turn going to happen where this starts, you know, making a little more sense and being funny? And then basically it was when the cleanup crew happened. The cleanup crew is what gives this episode an A+ or A- to me.
You're giving this an A-.
I'm going to give it an A-.
Wow.
Yeah, because I don't think it's the most hysterical one, but the fucking cleanup crew dudes, like, just every moment they're on the screen trying to find to clean up all the rectal blood and cum, which is a fucking gnarly, dark-ass rape joke, you know, I was laughing hysterically. So basically,
I'm wrong.
Yeah, you're totally wrong.
Okay, you know, Ryan is the person I know best on this podcast, so this is or disappointing.
Is
I guess maybe not. All right,
who are you?
All right, Amanda, what about you? Am I semi close?
Once again, you were pretty on. I was going to give it a C. So, okay. Yeah, you read me like a book. Yeah, I mean, I also laughed a lot. I just thought it was a little bit messy. And I mean, I thought it was cool that they kind of went with the same theme of like parents being so immune to something horrible that they don't even care if it's like happening to their own kids, which was kind of interesting. But yeah, it just, I don't know. There was like a whole like Butters montage with that. I just didn't understand why some stuff was there and I didn't really get the ending. Maybe we'll figure it out and I'll like it
more. We're going to talk about that montage because I don't think it makes any sense.
I love the montage.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Okay. Lux, what about you?
Yeah. Last week you got pretty close, but this week you are way, way off. I would give this a B plus A minus, kind of like Ryan.
Wow. I thought that everyone was going to hate this episode.
In this episode that are like made for me, which one is like jokes about cum, I think are super funny. and two is I think institutions are bad. And this episode was about that. And so it was really, it got to, it was about that in a way that I thought was good. And so it got to like some things I really enjoy. And it was funny. Like Ryan's right. This episode was fucking funny, man. It had a bunch of really good jokes, not just about cum, jokes about all kinds of things.
Man, I laughed so hard on the first episode. And I think the reason why the first episode worked for me is because it is absurd to think that a parent would be okay or nonchalant about the fact that a school shooting is happening at their own child's school. That's a level of absurdity that is really funny. With this, it's that these parents are just trivially making jokes about pedophiles, but there's really no indication that there's a pedophile in their own town. So I didn't feel like the contrast between how you would expect them to react and how they actually react was really that interesting. And then as far as the cleanup crew, you know, it's it's crazy, dude, but when they came up in that white van and were like dangling chocolate bars in front of the kids and saying like
quoting Bible verses,
that made me a little bit uncomfortable.
That was definitely the point.
No, definitely. But there was something about the first episode. It was uncomfortable and funny, whereas this, it was just, ugh.
See, yeah, I can't believe how we have this, because to me, it is exactly the opposite. Like, the first time I'm like, with the school shooting one, I'm like, yeah, this situation is absurd, but I can't find myself laughing at it. It's not, like, making me laugh inherently. The second one is the opposite, where I'm like laughing inherently.
But is it just because it's cum jokes? Like, it's an eight-year-old's birthday party. Of course it's cum.
Yeah, it's way sillier. The performance is way sillier. It's a big fat guy that just sounds like Jabba the Hutt or whatever, you know, doing it. So yeah, like it's not just like you're not just going, oh wow, I get how hard they're hitting with this commentary, but I'm not really laughing.
This episode to me is just entirely confusing. I don't feel like I get it. I don't really know what they were going
for. I honestly don't see how it's confusing.
Yeah, I think this episode was like strikingly coherent.
Yeah, pretty clear.
All right. Well, then I am looking forward to the conversation.
By the way, I was the only one raised in the Catholic Church, right?
No, I know. That's why I figured you would hate this.
No, that's a question. You guys were both raised in Jewish?
I'm Jewish, yeah.
Okay. So we're all Jews.
Oh, 100% bar mitzvah and everything.
Jews control the media.
Yeah, well, the one Catholic fucking loved this episode, so that says something.
Okay, we should need to have Austin on here. He's a good Catholic boy. All right, so let's go into a recap.
Relapse Catholic, I should say. Anyway, keep going.
Right. Heckling priests in church has become South Park adults' new favorite pastime, even giving them a weekly sense of serenity and comfort. The nonstop pedophile jokes dishearten Father Maxie, who finds solace in Butters as they both share the feeling of having been ridiculed. They quickly form a close bond, but the image of a priest hanging out with a young boy draws only more lampoonery. Much to the adults' dismay, Father Maxie closes the church to spend time with Butters. When the adults inform the archdiocese that Maxie isn't at church, he immediately assumes Maxie's off molesting a child, so he nonchalantly dispatches the cleanup crew to seek out the priest and remove any evidence of hanky-panky. After being rejected by the children at Clyde's birthday party, Father Maxie confesses his guilt of not speaking out against the church earlier. Meanwhile, the cleanup crew kidnaps Stan, Clyde, and Butters and takes them camping in their underwear in order to lure out Father Maxie. The cleanup crew tries to relocate Father Maxie, but Maxie denies their offer, kills them all with a cum-cleaning Zamboni, and vows to protect the children. Father Maxie reopens the church, and when the pedophile jokes come, he turns the other cheek. End of episode.
Nice.
All right. So before we get into the nitty gritty, the first thing I want to bring up is that last time we had asked ourselves about serialization. Yeah. And did you guys notice that Stan is in a harness this episode?
I did.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So subtle serialization, leaving the door open for further serialization.
Isn't that basically?
But I would hardly call that serialization.
You know, yeah. I mean, like, this just, is basically, Ryan, like exactly what you said was going to happen on the last episode. You were right. Like, maybe Stan will be hurt or something and everything else will be
Thank
fine.
Thank you very much.
And that's like what we got.
But I mean, if he didn't have a sling,
it actually like kind of formally fits though, because the whole thing in the last episode is no one's talking about the school shootings. So I kind of liked that he just had a broken arm and like nobody really gave a shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Meta point.
Yeah. I'm just saying that in season 10, they wouldn't have done that.
For sure.
Even if Stan lost his leg, he'd be normal in the next episode.
Yeah, right.
So they haven't completely reverted back to episodic narratives.
Yeah, they're not like on full sitcom, like the show's the same at the beginning as the end sort of stuff right now.
Right, right. And then one thing we talked about last week, or that you guys talked about last week, was the hashtag cancel South Park thing. After seeing the second episode, do you guys have any revised thoughts on what they're going for with that?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I have a bit of a spiel about this because I'm thinking about this a lot. So I think that the cancel South Park thing, like I said in the last podcast, and like I've said in our group chat, is the statement of like intent that they're going to get into grittier, grimier things and be more aggressive about confronting these like shitty things directly, which so far, 2 for 2. And also, I think it speaks to like their sort of position and like their speaker position has kind of changed, I think, in this season. At least it feels different to me, because in other seasons, it's been like the dumbest thing you can do is caring about anything. Like both sides are wrong. Everyone's dumb. And this season, it feels more like everything is fucked and it's like bad and grim and dark. And it's not as snarky as it was. It's more like bleakly, darkly comedic and less sort of like, which is
this
which
episode
feels
has a more optimistic
the old show,
ending.
And also much more 2018 than the old show is that like they finally understand that like cum jokes are the new fart jokes. And I'm glad like this signals to me that they're really moving into the present age.
Really
Do you guys
matured?
Not think that the ending of this episode is more optimistic than the ending of the last episode?
I do.
I don't even think so necessarily. I mean, I think that it's like, at the most optimistic it gets really is like, maybe one guy can do their best, but like there's a giant operation that's like crushing their good intentions at every turn.
To be honest, I don't think it like had much meaning. Like it felt like they were just kind of finishing the storyline. Like I don't know.
Well, the end, you mean?
I mean, if we want to talk about the ending, we can get into that now or we can save it for later.
Yeah, I actually want to start off this discussion about the overall meaning of the episode with an email that we got late last night from a fan named Matthew. And I think that...
Hold on a second. I want to say my piece on cancel.
Yeah, go ahead.
But all I want to say, though, is that I think that they're going to bring that back into an episode later. I think that that's going to crescendo into coming into... I don't think it's just going to be in the credits all season. I think that
you
at
mean,
some
like
point...
in a meta way? Like they're going to bring back Terrence and Phillip or something?
No, I think that they're going to like Lux is saying, having all these probably really offensive, you know, episodes, and then at some point, like that blend that is part of the show, and then there's maybe like a, yeah, like you're saying, cancel Terrence and Phillip, cancel South Park inside the show, and they bring it up.
Especially anyway. When you think about like the like you're canceled, sis, like discourse on the internet, right? Like when someone says something bad, they're canceled and they go away. That's like a real Twitterism.
Yeah, deplatforming.
And so, like, it would be totally possible, like, some person in the world, like, discovers the town of South Park and all the crazy things that happen there and is, like, cancel South Park, like, in that sense, right?
Yeah.
And, like, there's a crossover there and that kind of discourse.
So, anyway, to jump to start the conversation about what this episode means, I want to read an email from a fan named Matthew. He sent us an email last night. I thought that was really thoughtful. He said, "Great podcast, guys. I wanted to put in my 2 cents, and what I feel this episode of South Park was trying to show is how, in order for an organization to repair and reconnect, it's not to run or keep the dark sides hidden, but instead to remain transparent and allow the critique at full force. It's the mindset of Father Maxie had at the end, the bravery to stand there and be laughed at. That's the first step in both preserving his renewed meaning and mending the ideals of the church he dedicated his life to." Oh, that's okay. But... So I want to read what Maxie says at the end. He says, "Today I'd like to talk about the subject of penance. The penitent have deep remorse, but for the true penance, we must be humble enough to admit that the Lord's forgiveness is undeserved. In Job 42:6, we read, 'Therefore I reprehend myself and do penance in dust and ashes.' We are not to punish ourselves, but to make ourselves passionate, passionate to understand all that Christ sacrificed and how hard it truly was." So I think at the end, my interpretation of this, and I think also what Matthew is saying, is that he decides that all of the criticism is justified. I am going to, in a Christ-like fashion, take all of this horrendous criticism and just turn the other cheek because my mission is to protect children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Totally. That's so earnest.
What was confusing about that?
That's like so not, it's so surprisingly earnest for a South Park episode.
Yeah. I mean, that's these 40 minutes of television have been remarkably earnest for South Park, I feel like. And that's like no exception. And it makes so much sense, too, because the episode is about it's textually just about the Catholic Church, but it's about institutions broadly, right? Like the bad apples language uses at one point is very much the way we talk about like corrupt policing and these cleanup crews and all that are stuff that happens in the context of all kinds of things like the Supreme Court nomination stuff or the cops or whatever. And so I really like that this episode sort of was like, hey, like there are systems that are mostly bad. That doesn't preclude the possibility of good people, and good people have to accept that the system they're part of is bad before they can really make a change to it. And I think that that's a really good and smart take on the way that good people can function in bad institutions.
It's just like so strange to be almost like on the, like they're making fun of people who make jokes about Catholic priests, which is just a funny place for them to be. I mean, I think it's interesting, and I think it's definitely shows like a different kind of maturity. It's just strange when the member of the bureaucracy is like the hero and the people making snide remarks in the back of the room are like the antagonists.
Yeah.
Because
it was everyone's dumb and fart jokes, and now it's everyone struggling to figure out how the world works and cum jokes. It's like things just change.
But isn't Father Maxie saying that hey, these criticisms, these pedophile jokes in church have forced me to confront the evils of the church? Are they really the antagonists?
Mm.
No, I mean, they're both good.
Are the people, are the adults in South Park?
I mean, see, I think they're definitely I perceived it as their antagonists in that, like, their concern for, like, the lived realities of, like, Catholic priest abuse is much less important to them than making a funny joke.
See, I don't really take all that, like, I get what y'all are saying, but to me, it's way less are they the antagonists of the episode, and it's way more of a metaphor, like, to Catholic people, like, they are the joke of the world right now, you know? Everyone is just free range, anyone can make fun of them, even, you know, the people in the church are, and they're just, you're assuming that that's just the tip of the iceberg, like, everyone on earth is, you know, the butt of the joke is the Catholic Church, you know, and that's how, like in real life, that's how all the Catholics I know that are really into, you know, still very devout Catholics. I mean, they're like going through a real existential crisis right now with this whole thing, you know, and they feel like, yeah, like how do I defend myself against someone who's making rape jokes when there clearly is a rape problem in the church? Mm. What do we do from here, you know? But the church is really important to me. So that's kind of where the metaphor goes, is that they're all making fun of, you know, all the church members are making fun of it, but they need church. Like they can't live without it. Their lives aren't the same, you know, because of the community it brings them, even though they are doing it at the expense of the church in the episode.
But isn't that just a joke? The joke is that, oh, you think that at the beginning of the episode, the element that brings them community is the faith and the worship and that stuff. But in reality, it's just that they get to tell jokes and, you know, fall off the pews laughing.
Yeah, but
which is the funniest part of the episode to me is when Randy falls off the pews.
But in terms of, yes, what you just said is correct. But I'm just saying that when you're looking at, you know, who are the bad people in this episode, I don't think that I think that they're playing more of just a metaphorical part than
you're saying the real Catholic friends having a crisis of faith,
yeah,
and they deal with it by being
Oh no, I'm not saying that they're. I'm not saying that they're like the people that are like. I think that see that's where this gets into crazy South Park territory, because I don't think there are real churches full of people cracking jokes like this. I think that that's just supposed to represent that everyone thinks this, even Catholics, you know, or not necessarily the crude stuff about it, but everyone acknowledges that there's this fucked up problem going on, you know, and whatever. And
right, so South Park doesn't realistically present any productive way of dealing with the church.
They do. They say, because at the end, everyone is going along, you know.
The only one that has a productive paradigm shift is Father Maxie, right, who says that, I don't give a shit what anyone says, I'm here to protect children,
exactly.
And I need to call out other priests.
It's all about, like what Lux said, is that how do good people within the bad institutions function? That's the real thing. You're not going to change everyone thinking that priests, you know, are fucking little kids, because that's just ingrained in people's minds. So how do you deal with it from there if you're the good guy in the institution?
Yeah. But, there are moments where Randy is, instead of, like, being genuinely concerned, I guess I felt like we were supposed to think that they were kind of thoughtless for just laughing all of this off. But that was just my interpretation.
I mean, I think some of it is following up on this, like, emotional numbing stuff from episode one.
Yeah.
I think, like, that's going to be a riff for the season. But I mostly agree with Ryan that, like, they go to church because church serves a function that, like, is meaningful to a lot of people, even if in this case that function is just making fun of a priest. And I think that, like, what the show is sort of arguing is that, you know, these things are good. Like the ethos of church is good. Communities getting together to do stuff is good. Like, charity and good works are, like, by definition, pretty good. But, like, the church has cleanup crews that, like, protect pedophiles who, like, touch children. Right. And it's trying to reconcile those two things. And I think the show, it does a really good job of being like, church does help people, makes people feel better, but also look at these horrible monsters and they're cum bony.
And how do we deal with that?
And like, that parallel, like, that balancing act is, like, why I like this episode so much.
Did anybody else think that, or did anyone else expect that maybe Sharon was going to again be the voice of, like, why are we making these jokes? Why are we trivializing such a heinous act? I was expecting that. And then when I was rewatching the episode, I saw that Sharon was laughing at all these jokes with the rest of the community.
Well, she, you know, she kind of got Clockwork Orange brainwashed at the end of the first
that's
episode.
True.
So she's just like the rest
she's
of
getting,
them.
Yeah, she's getting,
Ludo Vigood.
That's right. There's an interesting thing that was happening in the episode. It was very subtle. And I know that a lot of times South Park does criticize social media. But you notice whenever Randy is trading jokes with either Mr. Scotch or anyone else, he's always saying, can I post this? He said, or he says, salvation in a little boy's mouth. I'm going to post that one for sure. And then when Randy sees the boys with Father Maxie playing a board game, he says, no way, hang on. I got to post this. I was thinking that maybe this is a little bit too much of a stretch, but that social media creates such a distance from the gravity of a horrible event like this that only perpetuates this desensitization that we saw in this episode and in episode one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a stretch at all. I think that's for sure what was happening.
Well, I mean, only Randy is saying that, right? I mean, I think they're just kind of making fun of Randy being like an Instagram bitch.
Right, I mean, well,
Randy's always
a type of person. Like, those people do exist.
That's what I'm saying, yeah, is that, but I don't think that they're making a greater point about,
I don't think it's a focus. I think that one can make the point. I don't know if that's what they were going for.
I guess I can see that.
I also just thought it was funny that, like, the stuff he was posting was never, like, his own jokes. Like, he was just kind of stealing other people's jokes from real life to, like, populate his personal feed, which I thought was kind of funny.
That was good. This episode, like, there are so many little moments like that in this episode, like, little one-off tiny lines that made me laugh so hard. Like, there was one when Kyle goes to talk to Butters when they're at Clyde's birthday, and he goes to ask him if Father Maxie can leave. When he goes to Butters, he's like, Butters, can I talk to you? Butters just goes, wow, yeah, let's go, Kyle, and leaves. And the fact that, like, someone comes up to talk to him and he just says wow as a response made me laugh so hard.
I loved just when Butters was like, I didn't used to be this popular, because it's, like, funny, and it's also referencing the fact that Butters, like, used to be super peripheral, and now he's, like, one of the gang. I thought it was some fun, you know, meta humor. Yeah. Also, when he's like, has anybody seen my priest? Like, his priest is a dog. I laughed.
Also, when no one knows who invited Butters to game night. So he's, like, not really part of the gang. Like, I just thought Butters in this episode was so fucking funny. Even that montage I thought was hilarious that you guys didn't like.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about Father Maxie and Butters. So first of all, at least this is what I think they were going for. I think they were going for kind of like an inversion in the relationship, because usually it's the priest that tries to help the loner kid rather than the kid helping the dejected priest. But I felt like they didn't really go anywhere with that. And
they totally did.
I mean, it was so subtle.
It was like everyone, or like last season, it was all about everyone's reaction to just this very innocent, a boy helping his priest, you know? And then everyone else look at it and going, what the fuck? You know, like it should be, you would think it should be innocent that a guy, kid are helping each other out.
I don't
out.
Get what the point is. When Butters brings a priest to a birthday party and Clyde says, I don't want a priest at my birthday party, even if the priest wasn't a pedophile or if pedophile priest wasn't a problem, it's reasonable for a kid to say, I don't want, you know, a fucking adult or a priest nonetheless at my birthday parties. What is the point?
The point is that you can't think about it like the second way. You got to think about it like it's because priests have such a stain on them at the moment that he's like, dude, I don't want that guy here. He's a
right,
priest.
Right, but I think that's a shitty scenario because...
Why?
Normally because a kid wouldn't want a priest. Like, I'm Jewish, but I assume that you don't want like a priest, like a judge of morality or someone who you see as like a paradigm of morality at your birthday party.
Well, right.
But you don't even want an adult.
Fair, though, it's not like his kids are sitting up a storm at the roller rink.
But to me, it works either way. It works like if you're thinking about it like they don't want a priest to be there. And it also works like y'all are talking about, and it's funny both ways. And I don't think that it like muddies up the point. It kind of just it has a dual meaning.
And I think it goes towards, it's part of the Father Maxie, like it's part of what gets Father Maxie to his final revelation. Like, I have to protect how am I going to protect these kids? Like, he gets there because Butters teaches him about the world and acceptance and whatever through the lens of like a child's eye and a child's experiences. So he takes him with him through all that stuff. Like, Maxie can't get there without engaging with the children, because the children, you know, have access to whatever special truth of like life can be fun and like not always the worst thing or whatever.
I mean, the whole thing kind of felt like a hashtag not all priests kind of thing, which just isn't that interesting to me, I guess, would be my overall.
I mean, it was a hashtag not all priests thing, but I think that the way they did it was cool because it wasn't just like this priest is good, right? Like, he takes responsibility for fucking up when he first discovered the like weird sex cult, giant spider, red hot Catholic love situation, right? But then he's like, I need to fix that. And I know that like the framework in which to fix that is not the church traditionally anymore, because the church traditionally is bad. And so it goes from that. It's just not hashtag not all priests. It's like there's a step you have to take to qualify for hashtag not all priests. And that is like accepting that the church is fucked up.
Well, and calling out the other priests. He says that I'm a bad priest because I kept my mouth shut.
Redeemed?
I know. I mean, no, but it's like he did the first step. Like, he was incapable of starting a redemption arc until right now. And now he can start one.
I guess the only thing he can do to redeem himself is to take upon the suffering of having to be mocked all the time and still keep his attention on protecting the children.
Yeah, just like
Jesus. I think, is a pretty positive message. All right, so let's talk about the Butters montage. What is the point of this? Usually when South Park has these kind of sound montages, like this Faith in Christ song, there's some sort of irony present, but fundamentally in an ideal scenario, there's nothing wrong with a boy connecting with a priest in a non-sexual manner. So where's the joke?
That was what I was just saying a second ago.
Yeah, it that is the joke. It is.
What is the joke?
The joke is that they're having an innocent day hanging out, and that everyone else is looking at it like that he's about to fuck him.
Yeah,
fine.
It's that's the whole thing, right? It's coded to be like, oh, he's gonna try to fuck him or do something bad. Something bad's gonna happen. And the whole joke was that it was like just really, truly, like like you were saying before, Amanda, like this insanely earnest and sincere portrayal of like what a priest and child relationship should be like in a good world.
Okay, yeah, but also like, this is very small, but Butters putting his hand on the priest's knee was very weird, because I was kind of like, isn't that isn't that beyond the scope? I don't know.
I mean, that was a little bit strange, but I don't know. To me, that was just like, it's just Butters being a cute little idiot. Like, Butters being a cute little idiot is like how he functions.
I guess it was like more of the opposite, like he's playing the role of the priest comforting the kid kind of a thing.
Yeah, exactly. And there was like this, just it was just like purely wholesome, which like I think South Park can get away with just like the idea of pure wholesomeness as a joke because it's so antithetical to like traditional South Park framework.
I guess, but I go back to Team America when we have the Pearl Harbor sucked song. So we have that song, and then in the visuals we see your typical very meditative, self-introspective images. And I would expect there to be a similar contrast here. If there's a song saying faith in Christ over and over again, I would expect something to be going on in the visuals that is antithetical to Christ's teachings, but there's not. Right?
Yeah. It felt kind of slapdash, like they needed to fill in a minute.
I feel like it was just the song is just, it's a priest's song, you know? His whole life is about faith in Christ, you know? And so he's going through a crisis of faith. So they said faith in Christ.
But no,
over
he's
and
not.
Over.
He's just having fun with a little boy.
No, but the boy brought him out on the day because the boy brought him out on the fun day because he was sitting there all sad at church.
It really is just like they're having a nice time, and we were all prepared for them to have something terrible to happen. And it was just like banking on that like assumption to create a joke.
See, yeah, that's like, confusion, not comedy to me, but whatever.
I don't know. I guess it's just also not, I didn't find it that funny.
Yeah, me too.
I laugh.
Yeah,
I'm
with
Amanda
here. That's really funny.
All right, let's go into the mailbag. First up, we have our first voicemail from a fan in our Discord server. You can join the Discord server if you go to wisecrackplus.com, become a patron. Let's play it.
All right, here we go.
Hey, it's a fancy, this is for Respect Our Authority. It's a fancy octopus from the Discord server. just finished watching the South Park episode for this week, and I had an interesting question came across my mind while watching it, and it was how, in the story they have the traditional, you know, people of the town lose their religion, and they become kind of existentially despair and all that basic stuff. They lose their way in life by losing their church, which is, like, you know, pretty common ground for, like, a lot of stories. But there's kind of an interesting double back here where church really isn't church in this episode. It's kind of just everybody in town goes to church to make fun of Catholic priests. And so it doesn't really seem like a regular religious sermon, but instead, you know, just kind of like a kind of vapid, like, lighthearted criticism of church itself, but they still have that existential loss when they lose their religion. So I'm wondering if I could ask you guys, what do you guys think about that? Do you think there's a deeper interpretation behind this conflict between, you know, losing your religion and having despair, but then your religion was just making fun of your own religion in the same way? Like, it's kind of a weird setup. So I just wondering if you guys think there's a deeper interpretation to this, if it's like a critique of American religious views as of now, or do you think it's just like a fun joke they did because it was pretty funny. So anyway, thanks for the podcast. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Fancy Octopus, that awesome voicemail.
Yeah, and just a reminder, the number is 213-534-8807.
So yeah, I feel like we kind of covered this, and I kind of said I probably didn't. As you were asking about it, I feel like I wasn't articulating it well. But I think I agree with Fancy Octopus. It's way more about that's the most confusing part of the episode, is what I'm trying to say. is what are they saying about the people in the thing?
I think it's just a joke, and
it's a joke.
The joke is my
conclusion too.
Yeah, basically what he said. The joke is simply that church is supposed to fulfill us with a life purpose through grace and these stories that put our life into context, but instead what's giving people that sense of meaning in life is pedophile jokes. So I don't really think there's more to it than that. What do you guys think?
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. I think that they do want to say that like church serves a community function, but I don't think that they had they didn't have anything to say about like the actual like liturgy or anything.
Yeah, like, I do think that the townspeople's earnestness is, like, it's super played up. So I kind of felt like they did genuinely, like, feel better spiritually after church. But it's just funny because also they spend the whole time making jokes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
And it is kind of the whole thing of people that aren't Catholic being like, what the fuck do you guys do at church all day if there's all this shit going down? You know, like, like it's kind of like, yeah, well, like this is almost like someone's weird, stupid fantasy of what Catholic church must be like if this is how it is, you know?
Yeah. All right, Lux, I think he's got some other.
I got a few.
Other emails.
First is an email from Cody. Cody says, "Hey all, love all the Wisecrack shows and podcasts, and think you guys nailed the thematic elements of season 22, episode 1. Thanks, Cody." Thanks. I'm probably Jessica one of Jones. Many emails pointing this out. You super duper are. Carbon is dressed the way he is a reference to Jessica Jones during his investigation scenes. The way he stands, internal monologue, blah 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 blah. Furthermore, what he's doing is Google investigation. He has a root beer scene next to him, which is also a reference to many investigation montage Jessica Jones. I'm going to skip through some of this stuff. In Jessica Jones, the Jessica Jones joke may potentially play into the point Amanda made about the outsider perspective being the through line between both plots, but done in typical South Park fashion. Thanks again and keep up the awesome work. So basically what Cody's saying is, do we think the Jessica Jones reference was supposed to be sort of like she's an outsider the way that Cartman's an outsider to his story, the way that Sharon's an outsider to her story? And I guess that's the part sort of parallel. How do you guys feel about that? I know we haven't seen the show, so this might be kind of hard to actually get into.
I definitely, once those replies started coming in about Jessica Jones, it definitely made me like the Black Panther part a little more, because that was my least favorite part of the episode. But I didn't know that it was one Marvel character talking about another Marvel character. That kind of makes it more dynamic.
Elevates the bit for sure.
Isn't Jessica Jones' antagonist a guy who, like, mind controls you or something?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think it is.
I think that is accurate.
Is there anything there with saying that the Disney industrial complex making Black Panther into a cultural event rather than just a movie is some sort of, like, mind control that makes you like the movie so that you can adhere to a certain, or that you can basically express your cultural allegiance to, you know, whatever you think is the right thing? Exactly.
I mean, I think that's true. Like, we talked about this a little bit on that episode, right? The idea of, like, people, like, adopting, like, various, like, wokeness signifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think that there's something to that, that the way that, like, a big company like Disney can make a movie into one of those and then they kind of force everyone to go see it and like it because it, like, situates itself in a certain way within the discourse. Like, I think that is.
In our movie podcast, Greg was talking about how, like, his other black friends would be like, "You haven't seen Black Panther? What's wrong with you?" And he was just, like, guilted into seeing it. All right, what's next?
Next up, we got that email you referenced earlier from Cortland. Cortland says, "Respect our authoritarians." Still good. I think there's a really interesting parallel between Cartman and Randy in this episode, that being the first episode of the season. Both are an impasse with a member of a demographic that is other to them in some immediately identifiable way. Cartman's outraged that Togan would let him cheat, completely glossing over the possibility that this refusal might be an application of a moral stance, is very similar to Randy's confusion at Sharon's fear and panic about school shootings. Unwilling or unable to identify the moral core of these issues, both are ascribed to an obvious trait of their other status when compared to white men. This detail ties the A and B plots together really well for me. Wanted to share my thoughts. Love the podcast." So what do you guys think about that? I think that's an interesting take that we didn't really talk about, or I didn't think about at all.
So the point is that, like, both a woman's perspective and, like, a black perspective are othered by the white male dominant.
That they don't engage with, like, the moral position they're taking, just with, like, the identity of the person taking it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would go. I like that.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. That. I don't really have anything else to say about it because I think it's accurate.
Like, you
I don't know,
it.
Jared or Ryan, do you guys have anything on this?
I didn't understand it in the context of the school shooting.
Because Randy's reaction to Sharon is that, like, she is just having this, like, crazy, is having her, like, period and stuff. And she doesn't engage with the moral element. The same way that Carbon doesn't engage with Token's moral element. He's like, "Oh, he's black. He hasn't seen Black Panther."
Right. Yeah. Spot on.
Yeah, I think that's just a really great read, Cortland. That's a good read. Good. Nomenclature, just great work, art.
Yeah, we're stealing that, by the way.
You're rocking it.
And then we've got one more from the Discord, which again you can join wisecrackplus.com and you can come talk to us live in there. And this is from our good friend, the Communist Octopus Comrade. Oh yeah, there's a bunch of octopus people. Is another thing about the Discord you should know. This is from the Communist Octopus Comrade, and he says, "What happened to Strong Woman in the episode? I haven't seen the second episode yet. But it occurred to me that she hasn't made an appearance yet, despite being in the season finale. Was she just a bit character? Or do you think Stone and Parker have other plans for her?"
And what about Misconduct?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you guys think? Do you think we're going to get some of those guys back, or do you think that they're just going to...
I doubt it.
You don't think they're coming back at all, ever?
No, I think they're going to be sprinkled in. I don't think they're going to be coming back in any full way.
Yeah, I think the fact that we didn't see Strong Woman in the school shooting episode means she's probably pretty... Dunzo.
I think Strong Woman will come back. Misconduct, not as sure.
I mean, I didn't even really like the strong woman arc that much, so I'm kind of okay with it being gone. Although I'm always into there being good female characters on this show.
Yeah.
And what about the whites?
Hmm?
The whites.
Oh, yeah. Lurking in the background, as usual.
Giving Garrison finger sandwiches.
Yeah.
I think... Were they first introduced in the end of season 21, or had they been in earlier episodes?
I think they were a last season thing.
Yeah, okay. That was their first appearance.
I don't know if they'll necessarily come back in this season, but, you know, like with all South Park characters, like Officer Barb Brady or something, he might be gone for like 5 seasons and then come back.
Yeah.
Oh, and it does seem like they're tackling more of these like constant crises kind of things this season, at least so far. So some of that stuff does fit in there, but also like, do we need to go back to like the white to Mr. Garrison right now or whatever? If we can just talk about like these sort of like broader issues, like 20, 30 year old molestation charges or whatever, stuff like that.
Yeah, like I feel like last season they avoided Trump except when they kind of had to. And I feel like maybe they're doing that just judging from the first two episodes.
Yeah, but I think, at least for me, the difference has been that, I think you're totally right. I think the difference has been that like, last season they were avoiding Trump and you could very much feel them avoiding Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And this season,
yeah, but
it's
they
like
still talked about him for like half the episodes.
Trump, but they're still like diving in fully. It doesn't feel like they're dodging anything. They're just doing something different.
That's true. I'd agree with that. They're making us super uncomfortable.
Yeah. They're trying to get us to hashtag cancel South Park.
Yeah.
I was shocked there was not a Brett Kavanaugh episode this week.
Yeah, that was a big surprise to me.
It seems like they're going for things that are more, I guess they aren't as immediate, but are mm-hmm. kind of more long-lasting problems.
Yeah, like
that's what I'm saying. I feel like they wrote these episodes like 6 months ago.
Maybe they know that these problems aren't going away, right. So we can safely make an episode about it.
Be part of why I've liked this season so much so far is that like maybe they did write this episode 6 months ago and they had time to like tweak them and rewrite them and rework things, and so like. They do feel tighter and better, even on like little like tiny line levels, like Butter saying wow, than like last season did.
Yeah, and like this episode was entirely based around like one major character arc, which is like unusual. Like the B story served the A story, which doesn't always happen.
Yeah, usually because a lot of times the B story is just sort of like doing work because the A story isn't 20 minutes long.
Right.
Yeah, I really wish they would kind of stick with that structure more than the two totally random ones, which like last week it felt like, even though that emailer summed it up better.
Yeah, no, I mean someone solved the puzzle, so good work. But yeah, I totally agree. I like it way better when it's like two connecting and like interweaving stories rather than two parallel stories.
Like Seinfeld.
And you know, just to go back to the Red Hot Catholic Church point, I actually watched that episode last night after this episode
because
I was just like reminded of it. And it was really interesting because that episode was very much like, you know, aliens over here and like a giant spider and like just sort of outrageous things happening. And I mean, this one was too, but at its core, it was really about a character and like going through a change, which I thought was like a sign of, I don't know, it felt mature.
Yeah, this one felt...
Even despite all the cum jokes.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, it's a sign
of... because of the cum jokes.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's a sign of maturity. But this also felt both in a way, because I also watched Red Hot Catholic Love last night.
Right on.
I mean, it seemed like a natural thing to do. And I totally agree. Like, this one felt somehow more specific and more general. Because like I said, like, I think a lot of the arguments they're making about the Catholic Church, you can apply to a ton of institutions. The way that they protect, like... They're more invested in protecting the optics of the institution, the people inside it, rather than the people they're supposed to help, right? It's a pretty widespread issue with institutions broadly. And the show gets at that in a lot of different ways. But also, at the same time, as being kind of broad in that sense, it's very specific to the Catholic Church in terms of, like, the aesthetic and the characters and the character arc and Father Maxie. And so it really achieves something kind of cool that Red Hot Catholic Love doesn't, which is this ability to be both applicable to other stuff and specific to itself, whereas Red Hot Catholic Love is more just about, like, man, these Catholics will bend over backwards to like re-justify this liturgy, right. Which is true, but is a little bit less sort of interesting conceptually to me.
Totally.
I have two quick comments from the live stream chat. Ashley Spurgin reminded us that we also haven't seen Garrison yet. So that's there's right. all sorts of key characters just kind of out there in the wilderness of South Park. Then also, Arvin suggests that the montage, the Faith in Christ montage, is an anti-joke. By the cinema scene.
Yeah, that's correct.
He's right.
Yeah, basically it's an anti-joke in that when Butters puts his hand on Maxie's leg, it was all just to play with your expectations. Like we kind of said.
Yeah, it's full and anti-joke.
You expect them to go dark, and then they go light.
Yeah, I can see that. All right, so since we have said that we see that these episodes are more about long-lasting problems and are less immediate, do you guys have any predictions as to what next week's episode is going to be about?
Woof. I mean, there's just so many things. I mean, they've got to do, like, there's got to be, like, a climate-y episode, right, if they're doing long-term stuff.
Climate-y?
Like climate change?
Related.
Oh.
I don't think that, I mean, feel that's like way less
Man Bear Pig outrageous. Was, like, 7 years ago.
That's way less outrageous than school shootings or
children.
I mean,
like,
those are things that everyone
maybe it's just like,
says is bad.
Maybe what I'm thinking of is just, like, the general idea of, like, just general denial of stuff, you know? Like, denial of facts, and so climate change to me is, like, a big good example of that, because that seems like a pervasive thing that we're dealing with all the time.
I feel like it's time for an abortion episode. I'd be
Ooh, that's
into
a
that.
Good guess. That's a good guess.
Yeah. Yeah, an abortion episode would fit really nicely into this, yeah. this framework for sure.
Okay, I think that's. I don't think I can do better than Amanda's guess. Yeah, no, I don't really know. I think school shootings and priests molesting kids.
They've done so much of the hot button ones already.
I don't know. Maybe like militarized police or something.
Oh yeah.
That would be good.
I would be very into them talking about cops.
All right. Well, that's gonna do it for today. So, go ahead and if you guys want any of your comments, questions, thoughts, or insights read or played, you can either email us at southpark@wisecrack.co or give us a call, leave us a voicemail at 213-534-8807. That also applies to any of our other podcasts. If you are a fan of our movie podcast, Show Me the Meaning, or our Rick and Morty podcast, The Squanch, feel free to leave us messages there as well. I want to thank my co-hosts, Ryan, Lux, and Amanda for joining me. Where can we find you guys on the internet? Ryan.
I just released this short called The Real ABCs. You know, you've heard about the ABCs before, Jared? ABCDEFG?
Yeah.
Well, there's actually, there's like way more than 26 letters in the alphabet. And anyway, if you want to just hear more about that, go to Ryan Shorts on YouTube or Facebook, and there's just more to it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
I actually watched that right before I hopped on the call, and I can attest that it's extremely comprehensive.
Oh, thank you.
And it's really good.
Yeah. Show your children.
Lux, what about you?
God, just everywhere. I write jokes about prank calls on Not Even a Show on YouTube. There's Party World Wrestling, my wrestling show, which you can find on Facebook. And there's the Game Boys podcast and The Burrito, the Good Place podcast I do with Claire and Burns from Wisecrack. Cool. All those places.
Sweet. And Amanda.
I tweet sporadically at Amanda Shirker. That's all.
Very, very cool. All right, guys. Well, we'll see you next week with Season 22, Episode 3. And that's all. Screw you guys. We're going home.
Respect my authority.
Peace out, Internet.
Later, y'all.
Later.